Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Hey, y'all. It's Melissa Harris-Perry here on The Takeaway. And this is a little unusual, but I'm really looking forward to Monday. Of course, because it's Labor Day, which means a little respite from work. And for me, that means a day in the garden. Pulling weeds, planting mums, and tidying up the chicken coop. Part of my love for the outdoors comes from my dad's family. A multi-generational, Black Southern crew who enjoy growing our own food and tending our own gardens. And for many of my family, the outdoors also means producing your own food. Not only from that backyard gardening, but through hunting and fishing. For as long as I can remember, my dad and uncle welcomed all the kids and cousins of all genders to join them in hunting and angling. They've conserved family-owned land as an undeveloped site for their hobby. Having grown up in a family of African-American hunters, I was actually surprised to learn that according to the Wildlife Society, only about 3% of those who hold hunting licenses are people of color. And I was interested to learn about Hunters of Color, a national nonprofit recruiting and mentoring a more diverse cohort of American hunters. Brandon Dale is a New York ambassador for Hunters of Color, and we talked about our shared experience of growing up in Southern Black families where hunting was part of life.
For centuries, former slaves, which like definitely made up a large portion of my family, hunted because that was their first sort of form of really having like free sort of access to like a sort of income that wasn't sharecropping or something post-emancipation. And so for me, I think a lot more about that now than what I did when I grew up. You know, now when I'm out in the woods, I'm like definitely more aware of the fact that I'm the only person of color sometimes. But it's really, I think, awesome to sort of be working on the projects and mentorship programs to sort of help bridge that gap, because I think ultimately like people connect so deeply with nature and like this experience is for everyone. So in that regard, I think being a conservationist, being connected to the land, hunting, fishing, that's inherently a human process that everyone should have access to and be able to feel comfortable doing. But I think the sort of societal and sort of structural barriers there are what make it, I think, different for people of color.
Help folks who are not hunters, who maybe even have real concerns about it, understand how it is that you can see hunting and fishing as connecting to the land as opposed to extracting from it.
Hunters and anglers provide huge, and I'd say a majority of like the funding that we as like the United States have set aside for conservation and like protection of lands and like protection of our environmental waterways. And so this is set up by a number of sort of like legislative pieces, but some of the most notable, which maybe been familiar to people, it's called the Pittman-Robertson Act. And so this is essentially like a tax that essentially taxes sort of the manufacturers who make hunting and sort of hunting related supplies, so like ammunition, firearms, et cetera, but hunting clothes, like camouflage, et cetera. All of this is taxed before the consumers, the hunters, purchase it. And that tax specifically and explicitly goes to conservation projects that fund things like in New York, our Department of Environmental Conservation or the Department of Environmental Protection or the wildlife biologists that are doing sort of like surveys on like turkey poult sizes and, you know, all of the different parts of the environment that we need to have people like doing work for to sort of monitor and sort of evaluate like what is like our current status. So in a very real way, like the logistical piece of it, I think hunters and anglers are definitely like the most sort of financially invested in protecting these wild spaces. I think deeper than that, there is this sense of connection that I'd say is completely distinct to fishing and hunting, unlike any other sort of wildlife or like natural sort of outdoor activity. What we get at in terms of like whenever you hunt and fish is that you no longer become an observer of the process. You actually become part of that process, right? Like you're sort of fulfilling this like natural, very instinctual, primal. And I don't mean primal meaning rudimentary. I mean primal meaning like core to what it means to be like a primate, which eventually evolves, you know, Homo sapien humans, was the ability to hunt and to gather and to sort of like utilize and be part of the nature. In a very real sense, like you are sort of tapping into a very deeply seated, I think, rooted sense of self, in a sense that you're now more holistically, I think, taking in all parts of the variables. I think the depths and sort of intricacies that you have to know to like really begin to understand like how these animals survive, right, and live in the wild, I think it gives you a much deeper appreciation for sort of the sense of connection that you feel. And so, like, for me, the full circle part of it is that after, you know, a day in which I do kill an animal and then harvest the meat, I get to take that back and really complete that full circle that I think is really fundamental to our experience as humans. And I didn't even really get into the food connection piece of it. There are huge benefits of, like, sort of sustainably, you know, sort of sourcing your own food. I think the connection piece to the land is really just so much more powerful and I think profound. Like, I wouldn't be as much of, I wouldn't consider myself a conservationist nearly as much without, like, the dedication that I've had to hunting and fishing, because it's allowed me to really sort of get to know something deeply and love something deeply to a point where I'm like, oh, well, now I need to protect this deeply.
Here on the North American continent, the idea that hunting would be for anyone other than people of color seems odd. Obviously, hunting, angling, this version of conservation and engagement with the outdoors is core to indigenous peoples who were here first and who remain here. And so I wonder about, as you all are doing this work to expand reduce barriers and to make more inclusive these experiences, the extent to which the sort of politics of land reclamation, particularly for indigenous communities, are also part of this.
People of color are not, this is not the first time people of color have been hunting. This is, you know, a continuation of a very, very long history. You're right, that began with, like, the indigenous communities that are here in North America. And I think that a way in which hunters of color specifically tries to sort of bring that element in to really remind people of that is just to sort of be meaningfully present, like, wherever we are. And, like, you know, if we're doing programming somewhere and we have, like, access to private land, we will make sure that we, like, sort of recognize whichever indigenous groups that land originally belonged to and belongs to. But then also, I think even more than, like, a land acknowledgement, just sort of treating a place with the respect and sort of reverence that, like, it deserves. Teaching people the skills to go out and successfully hunt are pretty different and related, but not the same as teaching someone how to, like, navigate through the world and through, like, their sort of hunting journey with, like, a conservation lens and, like, a conservation and, like, a lens of, like, reciprocity.
And when you talk about teaching someone, what are the skills? You've named some of them, but walk through that a bit for me.
First and foremost, like, safety is a big one. So, like, everyone to hunt in North America, you need to take a hunter safety course. Safety around sort of, like, firearms, bow and arrows, and broadheads and all things. Safety is a big part of the learning that we really try to enforce. But beyond the safety piece of it, there's, like, woodsmanship skills. So, like, tracking, understanding the weather and how that might affect, like, your quarry, understanding, like, travel patterns and sort of, like, topography as well. So, like, how do you read, like, a pinch point on, like, a mountain ridge where you might want to set up preferentially instead of just, like, on an open, you know, piece of, like, barren, like, flat oak land or something. Understanding, like, the biology of, like, seasonality of plants. So, like, deer are going to eat, like, this preference of, like, acorn over this preference of acorn. And how do you tell the difference between that? Yeah, the tracking, the scouting, the thinking about, like, preparing stand sites, the practice for, like, ethical shots and sort of, like, ethical practice of hunting, the preparation after you kill and then harvest meat. And I think the big part of it is too is, like, the sharing, like, all of our, like, events, like, and mentorship events that we've run so far have had, like, a really great element of, like, we will eat wild game and, like, sort of share the stories. And I think that's a big part of it, because I think it is relational, I'd say, like, and that's one thing is the community aspect of it.
Brandon Dale, truly an ambassador for hunters of color. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much.